This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi there and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. Now, if you're a regular listener to this podcast, you'll know that over the past year or two, I've been looking at Ring of Steel by Alexander Watson. It's one of the best histories of the First World War I've ever come across, purely because it takes us out of our kind of Anglosphere obsession with Britain and the trenches and looks at the world through the eyes of Germany and Austria-Hungary, which is in the English language writing a kind of bit of a road less travelled, and which is why I like it. But also, the kind of the scope of the book goes beyond simply a military history into a kind of a quite a wide social history of the Central Powers and this sense that they were surrounded, hence the Ring of Steel, which is a popular term used by the Central Powers to describe how they saw the world. So previously we've been looking at mobilisation of the population in 1914. We looked at last time how repressive Austria-Hungary particularly was in the summer of 1914, and the kind of the extreme new laws designed to crack down on dissent. And here we look at the high degree of motivation amongst Austro-Hungarian citizens and the different nationalities within Austria-Hungary who were more than enthusiastic to sign up to fight in defence of the empire. So, Alexander Watson writes, "The tight control over Habsburg society from the end of July 1914 proved, against expectations, to be largely unnecessary. Konrad von Hötzendorf, the chief of general staff, who distrusted the nationalities and had called already at the start of July for martial law to be imposed across the empire, confessed the following months that the enthusiasm of the people for the war was a great surprise to him. Reports from the time testify to widespread support for the imperial cause. In Vienna, citizens were characterised as steady and resolute after general mobilisation was ordered. in all classes, noted officials, a deep sympathy for the honour of the monarchy and conviction in the necessity of what has happened is perceptible. In Hungary too, at least among the Magyars, Minister President Tisza testified at the start of August to a very good atmosphere. Of course, since 1866, the empire had been had two major poles, Budapest and Vienna, and the and Hungary was a kind of, it was a self-governing monarchy within the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Soldiers passing through the kingdom were greeted everywhere with frenetic rejoicing and music and song. More remarkable was the reaction of the once squabbling peoples of the Austrian Crown Lands, the Crown Lands being largely what would now comprise Czechoslovakia. And Carniola, home to a predominant Slovene population, the regional president described how men obeyed the summons to arms with enthusiasm, thoroughly convinced of the necessity and the justice of the warlike action forced upon the empire. In Bohemia, the military command in Prague recorded that after the partial mobilisation against Serbia was ordered, against expectations, the reservists reported for duty punctually and in large numbers. Even a certain enthusiasm was noticeable. In the summer of 1914, after the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, Slavic peoples across the Austro-Hungarian Empire were treated with immense suspicion, even though there were Poles and Czechs who had absolutely nothing to do with the assassination, nothing to do with Serbian nationalism, and had no sympathies for the attacks at all. Most Poles, Czechs, Slovenes, and others looked upon the assassination with abject horror, as you know, it is a fairly normal reaction to acts of terrorism. Railway officials, watching departure of the departing draftees and their families, were still more upbeat. Bohemia was calm, Moravia and Lower Austria were enthusiastic. Similar goodwill and obedience were observed in the empire's peripheries. In Trentino, Italian irredentists conceded that the rural population was loyal to the Habsburg dynasty. Far to the east, in Bukovina, Ruthenes, which would be modern-day Ukraine, were characterised with few exceptions, very ready to make sacrifices and patriotically minded. Military units in Galicia were, as elsewhere, overwhelmed when far more men than expected reported for duty. Some of those arriving at barracks were under no obligation to serve. Those who were superfluous were transferred to the north of Hungary to fill the ranks of new formations. The Habsburg Empire demonstrated over the summer that, for all the troubles of peacetime politics, it still possessed great legitimacy amongst peoples. The nationality's politicians and church leaders were unstinting in their declarations of loyalties to Franz Josef, and conscripts everywhere obeyed the call to arms, and officials were emphatic, though amazed, that loyalty, not fear, lay behind the impressive popular response. There were even more volunteers. Vienna's Reichspost described men storming the war administration in person, by telegraph or by letter, to get enlisted. Already, before the end of the first week of August, many thousands were said to have come forward. Still, despite the pride with which such enlistments were reported, volunteers were revealing the limits of dynastic patriotism's mobilising potential. To judge from newspaper descriptions, these men were not from the broad urban middle-class volunteering movement seen in the German Reich, but instead came from predominantly from a narrower circle of cosmopolitan elites. Aristocrats, parliamentary deputies, and retired soldiers were reported to have offered their services. Many state officials were among the volunteers. They requested release from the civil service to enlist sufficiently large numbers to necessitate discussion in the Austrian Ministerial Council about whether this should be permitted. Students also joined their ranks, although numbers were paltry compared to the thousands enlisting in Germany. So a point it makes here is that when we previously looked at Germany, there was a huge tranche of the German middle class who saw military service as a patriotic duty and a responsibility, and something that was part of the part necessary for the further functioning of the nation. There was less of a sense of obligation, and more a sense that this was the commitment that Germans made to the defence of the Reich, and it was part of the kind of the unspoken pact that took place between rulers and ruled. And it's something that I don't think is that prevalent in Great Britain, for example. Not to say that Britain doesn't have a huge surge in volunteers. It does. But that sense of kind of civic engagement doesn't seem to be a kind of a predominant motivation. Alexander Watson writes, "There were also some men of lesser social standing among the volunteers, but they were not necessarily all keen to die for the emperor. Sigmund Sperber, for example, a 39-year-old pharmacist, worried that the draft order would carry him away from his frail mother and force his shop into bankruptcy. Volunteering seemed to offer a solution. In early August, he wrote to the War Ministry offering his immediate services, but only on the condition that he be given a posting in Vienna. That way, he earnestly informed the ministry, he would, in his free time, alongside the true fulfilment of duty for our much-loved emperor and my dear fatherland, also be able to discharge the responsibilities of a son." So, here we look at the kind of the connection, the social glue that binds Habsburg society together, that sense of oneness, of connection between different social classes, which in the best of times is often a kind of like a fraught undertaking. Habsburg mobilisation, while revealing strong vertical bonds between people and emperor, never achieved the horizontal social solidarity or depth of commitment seen in Germany. Partly this was simply a function of the greater distance between peoples of different language and cultures living in a multi-ethnic empire than between members of a unitary nation state. This is part of the nature of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It's a patchwork of peoples who have different linguistic, cultural and historical traditions, is quite remarkable how many of them are actually held together under one flag in 1914 and motivated to fight in the same way. That in itself is quite an achievement.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Still, Germany's divisions, particularly of class, were stark before the war. Equally influential, therefore, were the actions of government, Austro-Hungarian leaders were focused on compliance, not unity, in the summer of 1914, and strenuous efforts made in the Reich to reconcile or at least suspend peacetime disputes had no real equivalent in Franz Joseph's lands. One of the motivations for war, not the prime motivation, but a motivation on the part of the Kaiser, was to draw an end to the social conflict in Germany that many members of the Kaiser's government and elite circles feared would end in some sort of revolution. Hungary did, it is true, benefit from a political truce, the Troika Dei, from the end of July. In November, when Parliament met for its first wartime session, Tisza eulogised the conflict as a unifying force. It has put a stop to party strife, it has put a stop to class struggle, relegated the nationality conflicts into the background, and given rise to splendid manifestations of unity and mutual love both at home and on the battlefield. Nonetheless, this demonstration of unity could not exert so powerful an impact on the public opinion as the German Reichstag's war credit vote of the 4th of August. The Hungarian Parliament lacked the same legitimacy and representativeness. Its small franchise, rigged elections, and discrimination against non-Magyars meant that it spoke only for the elite. The Hungarians did, nonetheless, at least attempt to create a semblance of political unity. In Austria, by contrast, the Reichsrat, which had been closed in March 1914, was not recalled. So here we look at questions between Germany, Austria and Hungary of legitimacy, of mandate, of who has the political right, if you will, or the political legitimacy to vote for war, to vote for war credits, and to ask for, eventually, future sacrifices from the nation. There is a functioning Reichstag in Germany, but there is a kind of Potemkin village democracy in Hungary, and nothing whatsoever in Austria. So, referring to the Reichsrat in Vienna, the building was instead ostentatiously converted into a military hospital. Minister President Sturg may have been correct to fear that assembling unruly deputies would result in damaging public relations debacle. However, the readiness of the monarchy's peoples to heed its call in the crisis indicates that the government underestimated their loyalty, and the penalties of not reconvening Parliament were very great. First, a chance was missed to reinforce the conflict's legitimacy by gaining the sanction of the nationality's democratically elected representatives. Crucially, it also denied the people a forum in which to bury past quarrels publicly and then declare Austrian solidarity. So if you don't do these things, if you don't have a forum where Austrians and Czechs and Poles and Croats and Italians can air their grievances, can bury the hatchet with one another publicly over the various different inter-ethnic spats that inevitably happen within the Austrian Empire, if you don't have that, you might be able to survive for a while, assuming the war goes just fine, and you know, diminish and kind of mask the levels of public dissent. But if the war goes badly, Parliament or a Reichstag is or Reichsrat in this case is the pressure valve. It's how you release the steam that builds up during crisis, and not having one is a real flaw. The decision to run the war effort through decree rather than parliamentary consent additionally left the government highly vulnerable to criticism. Should the war go badly, it would be clear the regime alone was at fault. More dangerous still, Sturg's administration not only failed to recognise the importance of cementing broad political consent for the war, but actually abandoned the strategy of negotiating with and conciliating nationalist interests, which in peace had helped to keep the Austrian half of the monarchy functioning. So the Austro-Hungarian Empire, this multi-ethnic empire, involves in peacetime a constant dialogue, which helps to contain nationalist forces, of which there are many. I mean, nationalism tears the Austro-Hungarian Empire apart in 1918 by shutting down any avenues of discourse and dialogue. The Austro-Hungarian government, particularly the Austrian side of the Austro-Hungarian regime, didn't do itself any favours. A demand for unconditional obedience, backed by the threat of military repression, took its place. The minister-president laid out the new attitude in the circular to Crown Land heads at the end of July. Considerations of administrative procedure, regard for the mood of the parties, calculations about the present or the future circumstances of domestic politics, all this has stopped. There is only one thing now, the orientation of all forces in the state towards certain speedy and complete attainment of the purposes of war. So, this was storing up unnecessary problems for the future, and the use of kind of coercion or of intimidation or anything like that is completely flawed because of the levels of goodwill and public enthusiasm for the war that already existed. In the absence of any Austria-wide Bergfrieden, so social peace within the fortress, within the nation, the Habsburg Empire's success in bringing its people to war was underpinned by what can be described as a double mobilisation. First, there was the official patriotic mobilisation, comprising the call of the army and the appeal of the population as loyal imperial subjects. In tandem, however, there was a semi-official national mobilisation, varying in strength in different regions, and which was at this early stage supported the state's own efforts. So mobilisations in the Crown Lands, in Bohemia and Moravia, and in Croatia or Slovenia. Although many were nationalists, they combined ethnic with imperial loyalty and drummed up support for the Habsburg cause in their communities. And this is very, very strong. This is very, very strong. The British managed to combine this too, in part, which is a very, very different story, but combining national loyalties, loyalty to one's national tribe, with a sense that one's national tribe is part of a wider transnational imperial polity to which commands one's loyalty as well. This is something that the Habsburgs managed to capture to begin with, but this phrase under the pressures of war, as inevitably these things do. Okay, I'm going to finish there. I hope you found that valuable and useful and interesting. Do remember to catch us at explaininghistory.org, or you can find us on YouTube. I'm going to, my various updates on current affairs, I'm going to shift those all to YouTube at the moment. So I'll be doing some more on the YouTube channel later this week. Thanks very much, everybody. All the best. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.